From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by 2 lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Everfast in the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness.
Bricks and Mortar pumps with March to the Arch, nonetheless closing in with 2.5 lengths to make up and a 16th to go. It's Curb On in front, Clyde's Image. Bricks and Mortar finding stride late in the game, and Bricks and Mortar's up in time.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence.
Tacitus is closing through an opening down toward the rail into the final 16th. It is Tex in front. Tacitus on the inside is second. He's trying to come and get Tex. The Ortiz brothers, Tex on the outside. Tacitus at the rail. And it is Tex and around Ortiz in the Jim Dandy.
And Vino Rosso edging away from Gift Box. He's coming into his own. And Vino Rosso at age 4 goes on to win the Gold Cup at Santa Anita.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the show that launched a network. The Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence and Keeneland, is on the air, and we are here with you on this 28th day of September 2019. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. And as always, happy to have you with me for the next couple of hours as we continue to edge closer to the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Santa Anita, November 1st and 2nd, 34 days, 5 hours, and just 35 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup. And that road to the Breeders' Cup has really, really started to heat up now. And it's going to continue to do so over the next couple of weeks as we see top contenders from every division making those final prep races, all important final preps, to set them up for what they hope will be a successful run on racing's championship days. Santa Anita kicked off their fall meet yesterday, and they did it with a bit of a new format, running two Breeders' Cup Challenge races on that opening day card. That's different. Remember, all of those races typically were held on this one day, on Saturday. They didn't do it that way this year. They spread it out over 3 days, a lot like we're going to see at Keeneland next weekend. The Chandelier for the two-year-old fillies was contested yesterday, as was the American Pharoah for the two-year-old boys. The Chandelier, a win and you're in for the juvenile fillies division. And Bast, the daughter of Coolmore stallion Uncle Mo, for Bob Baffert and John Velasquez, getting the victory. In the American Pharoah, it was Bob Baffert saddling the winner. Johnny V in the saddle for that one, too. So they sweep both of the win and you're ins. And Bob does it with 8 rings. Who becomes, get this, the 12th grade 1 winner for Gainesway Stallion Empire Maker. And congratulations to the classy John Velasquez. Not only is he one of the greatest riders that we've ever seen, but he is one of the greatest people as well. Great family guy. And Johnny V, now the all-time leading jockey in terms of greatest stakes victory. So congratulations to Johnny on that honor. They have 2 more winning your in races scheduled for Santa Anita today. 1 other will be run tomorrow. And I'm going to visit with Mike Willman, who is the director of publicity at Santa Anita, right around 9:40 Eastern. He'll catch you up on what happened yesterday, and he'll look ahead to the races today and tomorrow. Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith also going to be with me, 9:20 Eastern time. So the second half of the show focused heavily on Santa Anita this morning. Mike will reflect upon the great Zenyatta, who, of course, rolled to victory in the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita 10 years ago, 2009. We'll talk to Mike about that. We'll talk to him about McKenzie, who he rides later today. And we'll talk to him about Game On Dude. This, of course, is Game On Dude week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We've been celebrating the multiple Grade 1 winner all week long. This week presented by our friends at Red Brand Fence. And Game On Dude, a 3-time winner of the Big Cap, a winner of the Charlestown Classic, among so many other great performances, and Mike was aboard. He'll look back on Game On Dude as well, and that interview coming up at 9:20 Eastern time. Next weekend, as I mentioned, Keeneland will open the doors for their fall meet, now just 6 days away. They open on Friday. 9 challenge races on their 3-day opening weekend program. Ben Huffman is the racing secretary at Keeneland. He's going to join me coming up 9 o'clock Eastern time to kick off hour number two. Get a chance to talk to him, fill you in on what you can expect next weekend here in the Bluegrass. And Belmont, well, their fall meet just continues to showcase top Breeders' Cup contenders. They have two challenge races coming up later this afternoon. The Vosburgh, a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup sprint, and the Jockey Club Gold Cup, which will see the winner punch their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Classic. That's a card that also includes Grade 3, the Grade 3 Pilgrim and the Grade 2 Beldame, which will, of course, feature the top older female in the country, Midnight Bisou. Our coverage of those races at Belmont, live this afternoon on the network, 4:30 Eastern. Anthony Stabile, Steve Grabowski will be live from Belmont Park. You can tune in Sirius XM 156, and you can stream us worldwide. If you don't have Sirius XM, just stream us, horseracingradio.net. At 8:15 Eastern, after our first commercial break, you're going to hear from Hall of Famer Shug McGahee, who sends out Code of Honor in today's Jockey Club Gold Cup. He took the time to visit with Steve and with Anthony on our Red Brand radio show earlier this week. It's about an 8-minute interview. You're going to hear the whole thing coming up in just a little bit. Junior Alvarado, who will be aboard Preservationist in the Gold Cup, probably the favorite. 8:35 Eastern, Junior will be with me. And what a run it's been for Junior Alvarado. Another guy who, if you want to talk about classy individuals in the sport of thoroughbred racing, Junior fits that bill. So he'll be with me at 8:35. So as you can tell, busy show. We're going to get you set for all the challenge action coming up this weekend. And speaking of Midnight Bisou, I mentioned she'll go in the Beldame. She has been so, so good this year. There is increased chatter about the possibility that her undefeated campaign so far this year has put her into the conversation for Horse of the Year. Not champion older filly, filly and mare, but Horse of the Year. And look, I touched on it last week. This is a wide open year in the male older horse division. Wide open. And no 3-year-old has stepped up and done something special here in 2019, like sweep the Triple Crown. So you have to think that Midnight Bisou has a legitimate shot to be Horse of the Year. But here's what I want to know. And here's our poll question. You can go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And don't forget, you can always email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. I want to know your thoughts. Does Midnight Bisou need to beat the boys in order to be Horse of the Year here in 2019? She hasn't done that yet. She's perfect. She's 6-for-6. All of those in greatest stakes company here this year. She's won 3 grade ones. But she hasn't faced the boys. Does she have to do that? Or is what she's done enough? If she wins today, goes on and wins the Breeders' Cup Distaff, is that enough for Midnight Bisou to be Horse of the Year? And I know there are a lot of things that can still happen, and I'm going to talk about that here in a second, with some other Horse of the Year contenders. But just strictly looking at Midnight Bisou, does she need to beat the boys in order to be Horse of the Year? And if you go back, surprise, surprise, I did a little research. If you go back and look at the last 4 females to be named Horse of the Year, Harvard DeGrace, 2011, Zenyatta, 2010, Rachel Alexandra, 2009. Just take those 3. What do they all have in common? They all beat males at some point during their Horse of the Year campaigns. If you're looking for a Horse of the Year, a female Horse of the Year to compare Midnight Bisou to, I think a favorable comparison, not in terms of the races that they've competed in, because the races have been different, but in terms of what their campaign looked like facing only females, go back to 2002 with Azari. Azari didn't beat the boys in that Horse of the Year campaign. But she was plenty good enough against the girls and won the Breeders' Cup Distaff that year. She also had the benefit of competing in a year where it really was not the best older male season. Remember, that was the year that Volpone upset the Breeders' Cup Classic. High Chaparral came from Europe to win the Breeders' Cup Turf. But Azari was brilliant all year long, just like Midnight Bisou has been, but she never beat the boys. So for those of you who are going to go to our poll question, and by the way, it's a yes or no answer. You vote yes or you vote no. Does Midnight Bisou need to beat the boys in order to be Horse of the Year? Yes or no? For those of you who say yes, okay, look to Azari. Very similar circumstances in terms of what we see in that older horse division. For those of you who say no, well, check that. Go back the other way. For those of you who say no, she does not have to beat the boys. I'll get my own poll question right. Go back and look at Azari. For those of you who say, yeah, absolutely, she needs to beat the boys if she has any chance. Well, the only time that could happen is in the Breeders' Cup Classic. She would have to run against the males there because she's not doing it today. It's her final prep race. She would have to run against boys in the Classic if you believe that that's what she has to do in order to be Horse of the Year. Let's take a look at the top 10 NTRA Thoroughbred poll. We'll just look at a few. To be fair, we'll look at the top five to put this in perspective for you. Bricks and Mortar is currently number one at the top of the list. Bricks and Mortar, much like Midnight Bisou, undefeated this year. 5-for-5 in 2019. All of those in graded stakes. Four of those are grade ones. I told you Midnight Bisou has only won 3 grade ones. Bricks and Mortar has won 4 grade ones, but all of those have come on grass. So how do we look at Bricks and Mortar? Definitely the top turf horse in the United States. And according to the NTRA Top Thoroughbred poll and the voters, right now the likely favorite to be voted Horse of the Year. That's what that poll indicates. The top horse in training, Bricks and Mortar. Midnight Bisou is number two. McKenzie, who we'll see later today, comes in third. Then you have Mitoli in fourth. Mitoli, good horse, not going to be Horse of the Year. Yeah, he won the Met Mile, but he's a sprinter. He's not going to be Horse of the Year. And Sister Charlie, not going to be Horse of the Year. So it really comes down to three. Bricks and Mortar, Midnight Bisou, McKenzie. And I'm going to argue this, that McKenzie, who has started 5 times this year, has only won twice, 3 seconds. His only grade one win came in the Whitney last time out. McKenzie still has the inside track to be Horse of the Year. Everything's in front of him. He has his destiny in his hands. All he has to do is keep winning. It's like a football team, an NFL team trying to get into the playoffs. A college team trying to make the BCS championship game. All they got to do is keep winning games, and they hold their own destiny in their hands. McKenzie's the same way. He wins today, gets another grade one, comes back and takes the Breeders' Cup Classic, gets another grade one, he's Horse of the Year. No matter what Bricks and Mortar and Midnight Bisou do. In my opinion, anyway. And that's why we have votes. But I think McKenzie still has the inside track. Is he good enough to do that? I don't know. We're going to find out. If you think Bricks and Mortar should be Horse of the Year, if McKenzie doesn't pull off, and I think he needs to win the next two. He needs to win both of those races to be Horse of the Year. Midnight Bisou, do you think she needs to beat the boys? Can she win out winning the Breeders' Cup Distaff? A la Azari? And still be Horse of the Year? I guess it depends on what Bricks and Mortar does. But if Bricks and Mortar remains undefeated, then you're looking at a year similar to what we saw with Cotejean. Remember Cotejean, 1993? When he was Horse of the Year? He was a turf horse. Looks similar to what we're seeing with Bricks and Mortar. Wise Dan, 2012, 2013. Yeah, he was good on every surface, but Wise Dan primarily a turf horse. So it's interesting. A lot of ways to go. But the poll question today, does Midnight Bisou need to beat the boys in order to be Horse of the Year? Yes or no? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you want to comment, feel free to do it there. And feel free to email me. Email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, so here's what's coming up. I mentioned Shug McGahey, that interview coming up in just a couple of moments after this next break. Junior Alvarado going to be with me 8:35 Eastern. Our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, comes up at 8:54. Ben Huffman, the racing secretary at Keeneland and Churchill Downs, going to be with me at 9 o'clock. Hall of Famer Mike Smith, 9:20. And Mike Willman, director of publicity at Santa Anita, 9:40 Eastern Time. You'll hear from Shug next. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust Keep Safe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about Keep Safe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
World-class racing is back at Santa Anita, and you want to be sure to join us for all the fun and excitement this weekend. With the Breeders' Cup World Championships coming to Santa Anita for a record 10th time on November 1st and 2nd, top horses will prep here on Saturday for the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic and the Grade 1 Awesome Again Stakes, and fillies and mares will compete in the Grade 1 Rodeo Drive at a mile and one quarter on turf. First post time on Saturday and Sunday is at 12:30. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world class setting.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The Maryland thoroughbred industry, for over 200 years, the innovative leader. Maryland was the first to have organized racing in North America and the first to establish a state breeders association. Maryland created the first thoroughbred yearling show, the first state magazine, the first state breeder incentive development program, the first international race to feature horses from four continents, and the first $1 million one-day stallion stakes event. The Maryland thoroughbred industry is the innovative leader.
Maximus Mischief, the fastest two-year-old ever by leading sire into mischief.
Maximus Mischief running away at the end in an impressive debut.
The fastest Remsen winner in recent years.
And it's Maximus Mischief proving he's the real deal.
And with a 98 buyer speed figure, the fastest two-year-old of 2018.
Maximus Mischief, one small step closer to Louisville.
Max speed, max strength, max power. Maximus Mischief. Standing new at Spendthrift.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence.
Midnight Bizou is fifth. She's moving now. And the lead is two as they make their way to the top of the stretch. And now Elite makes her move for the lead, and Midnight Bizou comes blasting on the outside after her. These two will turn for home together. Coach Rocks has faded to third. She's a Julian Wildcat on the inside. They're into the stretch. And it's Elite to catch. Midnight Bizou, her fearsome foe, comes at her on the outside. And these two lay it on the line with a 16th to go. Elite on the inside. Midnight Bizou on the outside. They're coming to the wire. Who's it going to be? Oh, it's so close. It's so close. Was it Midnight Bizou or was it Elite? They were inseparable on the wire.
Well, our poll question this morning, does Midnight Bisou need to beat the boys in order to be Horse of the Year in 2019? Whichever way you fall, that's a yes or no answer. You can vote at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. Whichever way you fall, and by the way, that was Larry Colmus bringing them home in the personal ensign the last time we saw Midnight Bisou in action, running down Elate in the final strides. That may be unquestionably the race of the year. Unless you like drama and controversy, then you head to the Kentucky Derby. But that is probably the race of the year. Sensational. Two outstanding mares just giving their all. Battling. And Midnight Bisou getting the victory there. Pretty cool. Again, head over and vote on that poll question. Let me know your thoughts on Midnight Bisou. She goes in the Grade 2 Beldame. That is part of a huge program that also includes two win in your ins. You have the Grade 1 Jockey Club Gold Cup, which will see the winner punch their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Classic. No trainer in the history of this race has been better than the great Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, who won the race seven times. That's right, seven Gold Cup wins for Jim Fitzsimmons. Well, guess what? Shug McGahee's been pretty good, too. Doesn't have seven, but he's got three. His first coming, how about this, 1985. You remember Van Landingham? 89, Easy Goer. He comes back 4 years later with Miner's Mark. There's a name from the past. Miner's Mark winning it in 1993. He comes back here in 2019 looking to win it for a fourth time, and he does it with three-year-old Code of Honor, the Traverse Stakes winner. And earlier this week, Shug took time to visit with Anthony Stabile and Steve Grabowski on our Red Brand radio show, which you can catch during the week here on the network from 3 to 6 Eastern Time every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And Shug talked about his three-year-old, Code of Honor.
Code of Honor coming into this Jockey Club Gold Cup, the 8-5 morning line favorite. Let's start with that. Were you a little surprised? I know you don't worry too much about the morning line and that tote board, but were you a little surprised that with a couple of accomplished Grade 1 older horses like Preservationist and Vino Rosso in here that they made Code of Honor the 8-5 favorite?
I was, Anthony. I mean, I looked at it this afternoon just to see what the prices were, and I got some horses in at Laurel and Delaware, and I was surprised, you know, when I looked up and saw he was 8-5, you know, over Preservationist and Vino Rosso, because, you know, like you say, they're accomplished Grade 1 winners or older horses. This is something new for us. But, you know, the odds don't make the race, but I'd rather be the favorite than not. So we'll see what happens.
You talked about taking on the older horses here. I know when the Travers was first wrapped up, there was some initial thought that maybe the Pennsylvania Derby last Saturday at Parks was in the cards for Code of Honor. What ultimately made you decide to go this route and take on the Jockey Club Gold Cup?
Well, really what I was doing was just leaving the door open for that race in case, you know, I decided I wanted to go there. But it really never was, you know, up high in my ideas. It was mostly always a Jockey Club Gold Cup and see from there. He likes Belmont. I only got to walk him a little ways from my barn to the paddock. He's trains here every day, and he's always breezed and raced good. You know, his two races here both been really good races. So, you know, I thought, why take him out of town and go through all that, not knowing really how he might maybe handle it. And you know, we decided to stay here. But like I say, the Pennsylvania Derby was something I was just sort of keeping a little crack in the door in case. I didn't want to say I was going there and then decided to go there, and then I would get all the social scrutiny that I don't like.
You know, it's been an interesting year for Code of Honor. He came in as one of the early favorites for the Kentucky Derby. I remember how disappointed you were. Jude Feld and I spoke to you Breeders' Cup week right before you had to declare him from the race, and how disappointed you were. And then he doesn't start off the year great in that Mucho Macho Man, but, you know, things kind of turned around. But really, since the Kentucky Derby, he has he's blossomed. Has it been do you kind of feel that way about him? Has it been like a tale of two different seasons for him?
Yeah, I think you're right on, Anthony. I think that from the Derby till now, you know, he's made great strides. And, you know, he trained so well up to the Dwyer. I've been really disappointed if he hadn't gone over there and run really well. And it was the same way with the Travers. You know, I had about as much confidence going over for the Travers and a horse that was going to run good as I have in a long time. And the only reason I wouldn't have that, you know, that same amount of confidence going in Saturday is just because he's doing something he hadn't done before. You know, and that's run against older horses. But, you know, I've got a lot of confidence that he's going to run his race. But, you know, I think that I was really disappointed that we didn't get to run the Breeders' Cup because, you know, as you know, he was training so well here when we went down there. And I think that, not taking anything away from game winner by any means, but I think he'd have had his hands full that day and for him to get sick. And then just everything just didn't go right there for a couple of months. You know, as you remember, we got back here and it got extremely cold and the tracks were frozen. I had to train on the training track that I'm not as familiar with as I am maybe, you know, especially the main track, because I always train on the main track. And then probably, you know, maybe when he got sick, it took a little something more out of him than I thought. And, you know, he didn't run well in the Mucho Macho. I think that there was probably some other things. I think we chased pretty fast second quarter in there for a horse hadn't run since the first part of October. But, you know, really since then, all of his races have been good. It, you know, I mean, winning the Fountain of Youth and coming back in the Florida Derby, you know, that was kind of a funny race with, you know, the one horse on the lead by himself and going slow, and it took us out of our game plan. And, you know, I think we were probably kind of lucky to be third. But, you know, then we got to the Derby, and, I think he ran really well in the Derby. But, you know, I think since then it's been a different horse. You know, I'd like to be able to run him in the Derby now as of 3 or 4 months ago.
Talking with Hall of Famer Shug McGahee, looking for his fourth Jockey Club Gold Cup. We'll talk about that in a minute. With Code of Honor, the 8-5 morning line favorite this Saturday, winning or in for the Breeders' Cup Classic. You'll hear it right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Didn't have the greatest setup in the Dwyer, and then he got a pretty good setup. There was some pace in front of him. He came with his big, strong run late in the game. Big field, good pace to run out last time. Small field, just five in here. Kind of a murky pace scenario. I don't know if Preservationist is going to be the one to set the pace in here. Maybe Tacitus goes. Do you worry about that? I mean, with a horse like him, you'd think the smaller the field, the better. But, you know, these five-horse fields, they play out a little quirky sometimes.
Well, I agree. You know, I think sometimes they come from behind. Horses are better off in a big field because there's a lot of action in there, you know, a lot of things going on and kind of keep their attention a little bit. But, you know, in a five-horse race, you can't ever tell what's going to happen. I think it kind of turns into a rider's race there. But, you know, one of the things that I do like is the pace was a little bit slower in the Dwyer than it was in the Travers. And, you know, we were able to make up. So I think that, you know, going a mile and a quarter here, if the pace isn't legitimate, then we'll probably be laying in a position without putting him there. It'll be good. And, you know, that's one of the good things about the rider that we've got. I mean, he probably rides Belmont is better than anybody. And, you know, I think it turns into a rider's race a little bit with five horses and going a mile and a quarter, not really knowing what the pace scenario is going to be. So I think that, you know, I'm lucky to have, you know, what I consider one of the best, if not the best.
And, of course, Shug, speaking of John Velasquez, who had ridden Vino Rosso in every single one of his starts, could have ridden him on Saturday, could have went out to California to ride Seeking the Soul, instead rides you. That give you a little more confidence in your colt?
Well, you know, obviously it does, you know, but he's always been in my corner in that respect. He, you know, I think he's always had a lot of confidence in him, and, you know, I know – you know, like after the Mucho Macho Man, he was whatever it was. He was sort of mystified. And, you know, but after the Fountain of Youth, he came to me. You know, he was supposed to go ride Seeking the Soul same day in Dubai. And, you know, he said, I'm going to stay with you wherever you want to go. And, you know, so I think he's always had that confidence. And, you know, there never was anything up in the air about this. I don't really like to put riders in that kind of a situation, in that kind of a situation, but, you know, that's part of it. You know, they're going to put you in it sometime too. So I'm happy to have him, and I'm happy that he's got the confidence that he would pick him to ride over Seeking the Soul and Vino Russo.
Yeah, Hall of Famer Shug McGahee visiting with Anthony Stabile on our Red Brand Radio Show earlier this week, talking about Code of Honor, 8-5 on the morning line, that Jockey Club Gold Cup coming up at 5:49 Eastern. Our coverage begins at 4:30 Eastern time, SiriusXM 156, streaming worldwide, horseracingradio.net. He has the right guy, Johnny V, red hot, coming in off of those two wins at Santa Anita yesterday and the win in your ends. He's going to try and continue that hot streak in the Gold Cup with Shug later today. When I come back, you're going to hear from jockey Junior Alvarado, who will be aboard his stable star, Preservationist, in that Gold Cup, trying to turn the tables or trying to knock off Code of Honor and everybody else. We'll do that right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
It was 1942. America was in the throes of a worldwide conflict. Guadalcanal had not yet taken its final massive toll. Rationing, Victory Gardens, Rosie the Riveter, and Victory Bonds were the common bywords of the American public. Sports head Joe Louis, Joe DiMaggio, and Whirlaway as national idols on Saturday, September 19, 1942, amidst the vast, massive war effort. The marvelous 3-year-old Thoroughbred Al Sab and Calumet's 4-year-old Whirlaway, who had won racing's fabled Triple Crown in 1941, went postward in a much-anticipated, much-ballyhooed match race at Narragansett Park near Providence, Rhode Island. The race itself was the concept of Judge James A. Dooley, the president of Narragansett, and it was a winner-take-all, wait-for-age affair for a then-huge purse of $25,000. The track's profit for the day was to go to the Army and Navy Relief Fund. There were more than 35,000 racing fans on hand at Gansett that day, and they were not to depart disappointed, for what was about to unfold was to become, to this very day, one of the all-time classic confrontations in the world of sport. Al Sab, the 3-year-old, carried 119 pounds, while Lowell Longtail, as Whirlaway had come to be affectionately bemonikered by the racing public, had an impost of 126. Both were razor-sharp and were escorted to the paddock by a special police guard. In stall 2, Ben Jones, the trainer of Whirlaway, assisted by his son Jimmy, saddled the Calumet standard-bearer in the famed Devil's Red and Blue Silks. Tightening the girth in stall 6 on Al Sab was the redoubtable Sarge Swenke. There was an enormous crowd around the paddock trying to position themselves for even a fleeting glimpse of the two titans of the turf. A loud, prolonged applause rippled through the stands as Carol Bierman and the Irons aboard the great Al Sab and the infamous Georgie the Iceman Wolf on Whirlaway brought their stalwarts postward. Whirlaway was a 3-10 favorite, Al Sab 8-5. The distance of the race was 1 3/16 miles, and as the gates flew open, the Devil's Red and Blue Silks of Whirlaway flashed to the front along the rail. Bierman aboard Al Sab quickly picked up the pace and, as expected, quickly hustled his mount to the front, crossing over to the rail. It was Al Sab by a length and a half going to the clubhouse turn, but Wolf had the big Calumet colt going along easily and would not allow Al Sab to get off and set an uncontested pace. They hit the quarter in 25-2, and as they rounded the turn going to the long run down the backside, it was Al Sab by 2, with Bierman constantly glancing back at his rival, who was keeping closer to the pace than was his normal style. They hit the hop in a rather pedestrian 50-2. Going to the far turn, Bierman let Al Sab out a notch, and the lead was open to 3, with a 3/4 having him run in a snail-like 114 flat. Rounding the bend, Wolf asked Whirlaway for a bit of run, and his mount closed the gap to 2 as they hit the quarter pole. At the top of the stretch, with 3/16 to the wire, the two rivals were just heads apart after having gone a mile in 138-3. Then came that never-to-be-forgotten stretch run that was to be forever indelibly etched in the minds of those in attendance on that gorgeous fall afternoon in New England. With Wolf going to the whip, Whirlaway pulled dead even as the two combatants were eyeball to eyeball. The huge clamor from the enormous crowd reached a crescendo as the two magnificent thoroughbreds matched powerful synchronized strides. Both riders were now using all of their consummate skills, driving furiously, both horses digging in, responding with every ounce of courage and strength they could muster. With colors glistening in the bright sunlight and the inseparable thoroughbreds in symmetrical full stride, it was literally like watching poetry in motion, an absolutely marvelous spectacle of sport. They thundered to the wire, locked together, a ton of horse flesh, inseparable, in an absolutely breathtaking finish. The final time of 1:56.2 flashed on the board, meaning they had run the final 3/16 in a rapid 17-4. Coming back to the winner's circle, shaped in the form of a large V for victory in the war effort, both were loudly cheered. Then came the agonizing and suspenseful wait as the crowd buzzed in disagreement over which had won after they both hit the wire together. When the photograph was developed and Al Sab's number flashed on the board, a winner by the very narrowest of noses, the shouting and applause were deafening both for the winner and the loser. It had been a truly magnificent effort on the part of both great horses. The very first to congratulate Al Sab's owner, Al Sabbath, and trainer Sarge Swenke for their win was the magnanimous trainer of Whirlaway, Ben Jones. Al Sab versus Whirlaway, September 19, 1942, at Narragansett Park. A most assuredly classic confrontation, and indeed a great moment in the world of thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Laurel Park presents a September to Remember with back-to-back weekends of nonstop racing and entertainment. Watch 14 stakes worth $1.9 million over 2 days. Taste red wines on the rail and watch and wager on 8 stakes, including the Express Bet, the Francis Memorial Dash, and the Baltimore Washington International on Saturday, September 21st. Sip ciders and seltzers on the rail with 6 heart-pounding stakes races on September 28th. Special post time, 12:25 p.m. Visit laurelpark.com/September for details.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence.
Preservationist is in behind a wall of horses, needs a way to get through. Yoshida begins to roll, but he's got 4.5 lengths to make up in the end of the stretch. Bal Harbor takes the lead. Tom's d'Etat comes after him. Mr. Buff is given way. Preservationist comes to an opening between horses. Mongolian Groom is in tight. Yoshida's closing on the far outside. Bal Harbor, Preservationist, Tom's d'Etat, Yoshida coming. A dramatic finish in the one word that will go to Preservationist. Defeating Bal Harbor. And then it was Yoshida and Tom's d'Etat.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence and Keeneland on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga on August 31st. Preservationist for trainer Jimmy Jerkins, owner Centennial Farms, under jockey Junior Alvarado, getting the victory and doing it impressively under Junior, who, by the way, the 33-year-old who grew up in Venezuela has had quite the career. He has won more than 1,600 races to date, countless graded stakes, and found himself back in the winner's circle of a Grade 1 on August 31st at Saratoga. Pretty special. And Junior Alvarado, one of the classiest guys in the sport, is with me now here on HRRN. Junior, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning to, you know, all the people that just listen to your radio show, and, you know, just happy to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking a few minutes. I know it's a busy morning for you. You're working horses. You're one of these guys, Junior, that no matter how much success that you have, you're out there every morning showing up, doing your job, and you got to respect that, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, that's the way I kind of grew up. You know, like I say, since being, you know, in Venezuela, you know, that's the way you have to kind of do it. That's the way I've been raised. And you know, I just love to do it, you know. And the more horses I can probably get in the morning, you know, the more familiar I can get with them and, you know, probably get the best result in the afternoon.
Well, we just heard that clip of Larry Colmus calling Preservationist winning the Grade 1 Woodward. Put me in the saddle with you aboard Preservationist. And I know that the poor horse wouldn't be able to carry that kind of weight with me on his back, but put me in the saddle with you. What was that trip like, and what was that victory like for you?
Well, yeah, you know, it was definitely it was very special, just because, you know, what happened and with me, you know, like it was like, I won't say more pressure because I didn't have it. It was just like more that I needed to redeem myself and make and show, you know, everybody that he does deserve to be, you know, in the top, you know, list of the best horses in the country, you know. And, you know, like, it was just a race where I just needed to make sure, you know, he relaxed for me, you know. Like, he was great in the post parade. That was a problem. We kind of have a little bit in the Whitney, you know. He was a little keen, you know. He didn't want to really be with the pony at all. So, you know, Jimmy's cooling pretty good for the Woodward, and I mean, he just showed up that day. You know, he was a beautiful trip. You know, we kind of were tracking horses the whole way around. You know, he was ready for me the whole way there. On the 516, you know, I kind of tried to make a little more probably inside of Javier's horse, because, you know, at that point he was getting a little pressure on the outside, and I don't see him moving forward. So I thought for a second he probably was running out of horse, and before, you know, I got the whole horses from the outside trying to cover me, I tried to make a move, but and then I saw he kind of move a little bit, and then, you know, after that, you say, like, you know, I just going to sit a little bit right here behind him. I just going to make sure we turn for home, and then I'll find my way with Preservationist. And, I mean, he dig in there and fight his way through.
When you have a horse like that, Junior, that can be a little, I don't know, I'll use the word high-strung, and you said you were trying to get him to relax. He wasn't as relaxed in the Whitney. How do you do that? What's a jockey do to get their horse to relax?
Just you have to kind of feel him and communicate. You know, it's not only just pulling the reins. You know, it's you have to grab the reins and kind of let them know that, you know, it's okay to relax a little bit. You know, just like kind of teach him. It's a long way. it's a silence communication between your hands and the horse. You know, you have to kind of like, you know, they felt that, you know, they know, and that's how you can get them relaxed, you know, and they'll know they're pretty smart animals.
How long does it take you to know if Preservationist is going to run a big race when you break from the gate? Can you tell right away that he has what it takes?
Yeah, you know, I just think, you know, he's you know, probably breaking the first 16th of a mile. You know, I will know if we were up to for a good race. You know, like I said, I mean, like last time, you know, when he broke good. You know, I covered it up right away. I you know, went to the rail, tried to save ground, and I knew I was gonna have the horse, you know, to finish the race. You know, like I didn't know it was gonna be that much traffic at the end. You know, but like I said, I knew he was gonna give me his A race. So I'm hopefully, you know, he'll bring that today too, and it'll be tough.
After you won the Woodward, I know it was an emotional win for you. You were on Twitter tweeting about the people that had supported you, thanking everybody for supporting you. Junior, why was that victory so emotional, and why did it mean so much to you?
It's like you say, you know, you. I've been working a lot, you know, trying to get to the spot where I can get to ride those nice horses, you know, and like I say, when I got him beat and the Whitney, what leaves, you know, I thought he should have run a much better race, but I make a bad decision, try to change his style just because trying to beat one horse instead of trying to beat them all. And, you know, I got a lot of people, you know, saying like, oh, you rode it bad, this and that. And, you know, and at the same time, just having the owners to give me another opportunity to show that I can, that we can do the right thing and that we can win the race. You know, it means a lot to me. You know, they stick with me, you know, they didn't took me off. And I really was very appreciative of that.
Junior Alvarado with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Preservationist going to the post 9-5. Second choice on the morning line in this afternoon's Jockey Club Gold Cup. Again, our coverage beginning 4:30 Eastern Time, live from Belmont Park. So it sounds to me, Junior, like when people come out and maybe they're critical, we see this all the time with jockeys and with any athlete, if they're critical of your performance, that's something that you can take and turn around and use as motivation and use as fuel going forward. Is that accurate?
Oh, definitely. That, at least, in, you know, from me, that's how I use it. You know, and even more with a horse like him, which I know who he is and how good he is. You know, it's definitely easier to turn it around and prove him, you know, that they were good.
You know, what's it mean to be back on top of the sport? And let me I'll preface it this way with this question. In 2016, you had it rolling. You win a pair of grade ones that year, several graded stakes. You come back in 2017, and you have to battle through some injuries, and your numbers were down. It was kind of a down year by Junior Alvarado standards. Then you come back last year, have a good year. This year, you're right back at the top of the mountain. Take me through the past couple of years and what that journey's been like for you.
Yeah, you know, it hasn't been easy. This is a very hard sport, and you know, if you're away a week, people definitely they'll forget about you. You know, you have to kind of start from zero, building everything again. And you know, I have a couple rough years where I have bad injuries. We keep taking me out of the business, and yeah, I mean, it's been tough for me. It's been tough for my family, who's been all the time supporting me and friends. And but like I said, I mean, I always, you know, find out that, you know, I just have to come back and start working horses in the morning, and eventually everything will come back.
You know, jockeys amaze me. I've had this conversation with Johnny and with Javier, and, you know, jockeys who go through these injuries and still want to get back to doing what they love and riding races. And I've said to Johnny before, I've said, Johnny, you know, look, I mean, you're not a young guy anymore. He's not old, but by jockey standards, he's not young. And I've said, why do you keep doing this? Why do you keep coming back? And he keeps telling me it's about the horses, that adrenaline rush you get when you're aboard a good horse winning a big race. Is it the same for you, Junior?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just like 2 weeks ago, I took a bad spill. Thank God, I wasn't nothing seriously. You know, I escaped a very bad spill. And just being a week and a half without getting in a horse, you know, and just watching the races, I just, like you said, I just missed that adrenaline. I just missed that rush to be on the horse and winning. For me, it doesn't even matter a big race, you know, like just to get the rush to riding and winning the race. You know, it was only, like I said, a week and a half, and I was just already missing it so bad. So I understand what he's saying.
Yeah, it's great to see you back at the top of the game. Last question before I let you go. I know you have things to get to this morning, but the Gold Cup today, only a five-horse field. Is it a different mindset from a jockey's perspective going into a race like this where you're facing just four other rivals as opposed to a big field where you might have to, you know, conceivably handle a few more rivals?
Yeah, it is more complicated. You know, people probably sometimes they think, you know, a short field, it should be easy. It should be no trouble. It should be no problem at all. You know, it gets more complicated. It gets more, you know, like everybody's watching everybody more closely because there are only a few horses in the race. So, yeah, I mean, it gets a little more complicated. But like I said, I mean, I trust my horse. You know, hopefully, you know, he breaks good out of the gate. And like I said, I will have to figure out where to put it, just the way the race is developing at the beginning.
Who are you going to be watching in the race?
I think they might be watching me because I probably will be in front of most of them. So they probably will have to be watching me. But, you know, just hopefully, you know, I get a horse who can go in the lead and so I can track him. You know, that will be ideally. But if you know, when we won this Suburban here, you know, I was in the lead for the first 16th of a mile. Then, you know, Javier Horse, Catholic Boy, you know, he run off a little bit. Then, you know, I let him took the lead, you know, and you know, but like I said, that day I could be in the lead if I wanted to. But, you know, I just didn't want to go in a fight when I saw Javier Horse getting a little keen. So we'll see what will happen today. But, you know, I'm pretty confident with my horse and, you know, the distance. You know, I know he's going to love it.
All right, he's Jockey Junior Alvarado, Preservationist, his horse, later today in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And as I mentioned at the top of the interview, one of the classiest guys that you're going to find in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Junior, all the best this afternoon to you, and safe trip when you get that leg up later today.
Well, thank you so much, and happy to be here with you guys again. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. Junior Alvarado, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to get a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love by visiting embracetherace.com. Yeah, class act. Good to see him doing well again, and good to see him back in the winner's circle of these Grade 1 races. Interesting when he talked about the short field. It's a little more complicated, but he did say that they're probably all going to be watching him because he expects to be on the lead with Preservationist today. How's that? Here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, taking you inside the race. I guess it was no surprise, though, that he was probably going to go to the front. Kind of looks like that on paper, too. All right, when we come back, it's your Industry Star of the Week segment presented by Stuart Morris. And the second half of the show, which still includes interviews with Ben Huffman, the racing secretary at Keeneland, Hall of Famer Mike Smith, and Mike Willman, the director of publicity at Santa Anita. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Bet any track from anywhere with Keeneland Select. Keeneland Select offers something no other wagering platform does, a way to give back to the sport you love through Keeneland's reinvestment in thoroughbred racing and fan development. Become eligible for a $100 sign-up bonus and earn $50 back on every $500 wagered on the Keeneland Spring Meet. Up to $1,000 wagered with code HRRN at KeenelandSelect.com or download the app free on the App Store or Google Play.
Power.
Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainsway Stallion, Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler.
who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 1:32 and 4 fifths, posting a 1:08 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu, Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire, and buyers agree, with First Crop Yearling selling for up to $250,000 at Keeneland this November. Look for 9 yearlings by Anchor Down selling at Fasig Tipton October. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. 13 years ago today, Bernardini drew off in a hand ride to easily win the Grade 1 Jockey Club Gold Cup.
Bernardini coming down to the final furlong. Just a hand ride for him today again. And Wandering Boy, and they're coming down to the finish. And once again, with nonchalant brilliance, Bernardini has won.
2 years ago today, Bernardini's son, Tekafel, won the Grade 1 Vosburgh.
Charging on the outside, Tekafel. El Deal, Stalwalk and Dude on the far outside. Tekafel's got it. Tekafel won the Vosburgh.
And just last week, Bernardini's sire son, Algorithms, was represented by the winner of the Grade 1 Pennsylvania Derby in Math Wizard. Bernardini is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Not just a great racehorse and sire, but an influence.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence.
Delafina has taken the lead with 5/16 to go. Garada now right at her neck. Horologist is in with a chance. Serengeti Empress still trying to find some way through. They come to the top of the stretch, and it is Garada. Garada has taken the lead. Straight Band has made a big move on the far outside. They're coming down to the final furlong. Garada, here comes Straight Band on the outside. And Straight Band has come from far back to take the lead. Garada now second, but Straight Band is beginning to move away. And this will be a signature moment for Straight Band. She's 7-1, and she's got it. Straight Band wins the cotillion just over two at the end. Garada was second, and then Horologist and Bellafina.
A signature moment for Street Band and for her jockey, Sophie Doyle, who earns her first Grade 1 victory with that win in the Cotillion last week at Parks. And because of that, Sophie Doyle is our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. This segment shining the spotlight every single Saturday morning on those individuals who continue to do things the right way in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And Sophie Doyle is certainly right there. Stuart Morris, remember, he offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation, and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. His success is because of you, and he knows that. With multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. Well, without further ado, the lady of the hour, that is Sophie Doyle here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Sophie, good morning and congratulations.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, 1 week removed from that very special moment for you. And, you know, I had to go back. When I read that that was your first Grade 1 win, I had it in my head that the Thoroughbred Club of America at Keeneland was a Grade 1, because, of course, you won that race with Fioretti in 2015. But it was a Grade 2, yeah. So a new milestone for you. Well done.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant, and thankful to Fioretti for starting the big wins off. She was fabulous in my career at that point, and you know, it's nice to finally meet up with another horse like her in Street Band, who's just been absolutely phenomenal all season.
Yeah, and you hand Guarana her first loss of the year, her first loss of her career. Take me through that stretch run trying to run her down.
You know, Street Band, she just, when we turned down the backside, she honestly, she just carried me. It's like she just took a hold of the reins and looked back and said, come on, Soph, let me take you for a ride of your life. She just weaved her way through. And then when we were coming around the final turn, I dug in and she just said, come on. I was like, let's go, girl. And when we turned down the stretch, I saw Garana right there in front of me. I said, oh, my God, we might get to you. If we get to you, we might get a place in. And then as we were inching closer and closer, when Street Band switched to that right lead, she just took off. I mean, she really, really gave me such a great feeling. She was so strong. And the way that she just suddenly pulled on past her, like Street Band wanted to win that race more than anybody, I think. More, even more than myself at the time. I was cheering her on down the lane because I could just feel how much that filly wanted it. She really wanted to beat the favorite, and she wanted to win that race for her. And it was just a fabulous feeling that when you're pulling up and you know, not only have we just won a $1 million race, we've also won our first grade one together, and we're going to be going into the Breeders' Cup after this. And that's, just absolutely fantastic for the whole team.
Yeah, it's your third graded victory of the year aboard Street Band. How do you describe your relationship with this very special filly?
Two fiery redheads. That's pretty much it, two fiery redheads together. I think that's why we probably get along so well, that, we're nice and calm and quiet when we have to be. And, it's kind of times like that paying off with Street Band, because she was pretty fired up at the beginning of the season when I first started to be on board her. But now she is starting to calm down a little bit. She did get a little bit worked up in the paddock at the Cotillion. It was a very small paddock, and we had to do a lot of stopping and waiting, and she kind of got a little bit impatient with us. So for a split second, she kind of had my heart in my throat. I was like, oh, come on, relax, girl. It's okay. Once we get out of this paddock, you'll be just fine. And once we got out there, she knows her profession, and she really wanted it. I mean, her and I, like I say, we're nice and quiet, but when you're out there and it's competition time, it's game on, let's go. And she's as fiery and as game as I am.
You mentioned returning to the Breeders' Cup. That was a win in your inn. You've been there before. So what have you learned in those previous, in that previous trip to the Breeders' Cup that's going to help you now moving forward, Street Band?
I think, dealing with, it's all the impressions of what everybody is expecting from you, and what's the, a lot of press. You're in the public eye a lot more coming into it. And for Street Brand and I, that, when we make it out to California, and I'm not sure if she's going to have a last breeze out here at Churchill, or if she will ship and then have a last breeze at Santa Anita. Her and I, we're just going to stay united together and keep relaxed and stay focused on what we're there to do, and, try and repeat a performance again like the Cotillion. The two of us. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Sophie, it's incredible what you've been able to accomplish, and it's great to see you having all the success. I know how hard you work and how dedicated you are to these horses, and to have that relationship with a filly like Street Band is very special, and can't thank you enough for spending a little time with me here this morning. It is a pleasure to honor you as our Industry Star of the Week, and can't wait to see you at the Breeders' Cup here very, very soon.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mike and everyone. I really appreciate it. Fantastic.
All right, we'll talk more soon. That's Sophie Doyle, again, Street Band, giving her her first grade one. Loved what she said about Street Band wanting to win it even more than she did. We always talk about this sport being about the horse first and the care of the horses coming first, and that's a message we don't often get out there very well as an industry, but that's another topic. Sophie Doyle knows it better than anybody. Congratulations to her. She is our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. Busy second half of the show. It begins with Racing Secretary Ben Huffman looking ahead to Keeneland's opening weekend. Less than 1 week away. That comes up right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network. We'll be right back.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Zajovia fights on. Tacitus is there. And then taps between horses. Master Fencer on the far outside. They're coming to the finish. And Sir Winston has won the Belmont Stakes.
There's an eighth of a mile to go. Bolo keeps on going. River Boyne on the inside. Catapult far outside. Bowie Zero. But Bolo has something left for the final 16th. And it's going to be Bolo coast to coast in the Shoemaker Mile.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum. Presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence.
Mucho Gusto trying so hard to go by. Maximum Security just in front. Mucho Gusto valiant, but Maximum Security has won the TVG.com Haskell Invitational.
Stride to stride, a furlong to run. One bad boy, never looked better, and has got the Queen's Plate well and truly won.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum. Busy Saturday morning. Great racing action all over the country. Those win-in-your-in races coming up at Santa Anita, at Belmont Park, and later at Keeneland. That all takes place next weekend. I told you at the top of the show, 9 challenge races at Keeneland throughout those 3 days of opening weekend. And we're going to talk with Ben Huffman, the racing secretary at Keeneland and at Churchill Downs, by the way. We'll talk to him momentarily right after I remind you that if you missed any portion of the show, my interviews with Junior Alvarado and Sophie Doyle in the first half of the show, and that interview that the Big A did with Shug McGahee talking about Code of Honor. Well, all you have to do is head over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. They're there for you. Horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Poll question of the morning relates to the top older filly in the country, Filly and Mare. That is Midnight Bisou, who we'll see in the Beldame later today. Does Midnight Bisou need to beat the boys in order to be Horse of the Year here in 2019? Yes or no? And so far, 56% of HRN Nation saying no, she doesn't have to. That's a good sign, because I don't think she's planning on running against the boys. Her connections are planning on running against the boys in the Breeders' Cup Classic, which is where that would have to happen. Well, Ben Huffman is with me now, and I mentioned that huge weekend at Keeneland, big weekend at Churchill Downs this weekend, too. Ben, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Things are good. Busy morning, and looking forward to all the great racing around the country. I guess we can start at Churchill Downs today and then look ahead to Keeneland next weekend. Tell folks what they can expect at Churchill.
Well, tonight's our last Saturday of the September meet. It's night racing. We've got 3 stakes. They're all quite evenly matched. And, you know, it's been a really successful September meet at Churchill Downs. And tonight's going to be really fun and some really good racing tonight. I mean, we're thrilled with how the card's shaped up tonight.
Yeah, the amount of money that you've been able to offer in the purses at Churchill over the spring meet and now into September and then looking ahead to the fall has really been spectacular. That has to help boost everything, doesn't it?
Yes. The success of Derby City Gaming a few miles away from Churchill Downs, and plus strong, stiff wagering on Churchill's product all year, it's generating a lot of purse money for our horsemen. They're responding. There's more of a focus on Kentucky the last year and a half or two. And yeah, it's really fun being in the middle of all that as we're growing, if you will. And we were strong anyway, but yes, the purse money is helping grow even stronger.
Well, you're going to make your way over to Lexington, and I'm sure you've been here plenty already, but you'll make your way here to start taking entries for that unbelievable Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3-day opening weekend, which I mentioned the 9 Breeders' Cup win in your in races. Ben, what a position to be in, the racing secretary at a place like Churchill and then coming to Keeneland and have to fill those 9 races. That can't be too difficult, right?
It's always difficult, but luckily, you know, we've got great racing officials in both racing offices, and it's not just me and you know, with the September meet, Allison DeLuca is the stakes coordinator at Keeneland. She's been there all month, and she's really putting these winning your end races together quite nicely, to be honest. And fingers crossed, these opening weekend stakes at Keeneland are really shaping up nice. I still have to get here. They have to get in that starting gate. But I'm very excited how this is all coming together for opening weekend at Keeneland. It's going to be really strong.
Who are some of the – I don't know how much of this you can reveal right now, but some of the horses that are pointing for those stakes races that, you know, some of the top names that we're expecting to see over those 3 days?
I mean, we can just start with Friday in the Phoenix, of all things, sprint race, winning your end for the Breeders' Cup sprint. I mean, Whitmore, Promises Fulfilled, Hog Creek Hustle, Recruiting Ready, coming off a strong performance at Churchill Lounge race a couple weeks ago. That's going to be a fabulous race. There might be three grade one winners in this race. The Darley Alcibiades for two-year-old fillies. We've got about eight or nine lined up for that right now, led by the Cassie filly that won the Spinaway Perfect Alibi. And you know, we're still making phone calls. We're still contacting trainers. And, you know, there's our races, there's New York races, there's California races. So sometimes it's hard to pin these connections down. But we're, you know, that's part of the process. That's part of what we do. And we're still working. That's just Friday. But I can keep going to Saturday if you like.
Yeah. We'll get to Saturday here in just a second. But I want to go back to a name you just mentioned. How about Whitmore? You talk about a horse that just, if you're not in love with horse racing, just watch Whitmore, and you become a massive fan. This horse is spectacular, and he continues to show up year after year.
Yeah, he's 6 years old, and, you know, he's raced all over the country from Arkansas to Kentucky to New York, and he's so honest and solid, and his form's been off a little bit the last couple starts, and from what I'm hearing, he's training really good. And I think those connections are expecting this race to kind of springboard him back to his good form and possibly another trip to the Breeders' Cup. I agree. He's a solid, solid horse.
Yeah, and the connections, Ron Moquette, his trainer, one of the true good guys in the sport of racing. So it's great to see him back in action. Glad we'll see him in the Phoenix. How about the Saturday stakes? A plethora of stakes coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, it's hard to get past the Shadwell Mile and the First Lady the way they're shaping up. I mean, the Shadwell Mile, I think I've counted. It's good. It looks like we're potentially going to have a 13, 14 horse field, maybe five or six grade one winners in there, and there's still a couple of trainers that you know are considering this race, but they haven't given us the green light. But Next Shares, Valid Point, Divisadero, Soudois, the winner from 2 years ago, he's coming back.
Wow.
We got a shot at maybe Van Beethoven coming over. So this race is really shaping up. I'm certain it's going to be a full field, and it's just out of sight. It's out of sight if they all get here. We're pumped.
You mentioned still making phone calls, still trying to get the connections to commit to going to the Keeneland races as opposed to going someplace else where, you know, look, you have other winning your in races, other options. When you talk to those connections, Ben, being at Keeneland, kind of here in the heart of the bluegrass and a racetrack with so much history and tradition, what's your sales pitch like? I mean, what are some of the things that you're emphasizing to those connections?
Well, I mean, the sales pitch, we have a lot of go-to lines, if you will, but Keeneland, it's the history, it's the prestige, the owners, the customer service to the owners, and the hospitality second to none. And these races have been proven strong prep races leading into the Breeders' Cup. And if you can compete and win at Keeneland, you can win anywhere in the world. Things like that. And, you know, the connections, they still look who they have to run against here in New York or California. But by and large, a sell to an owner and trainer to race at Keeneland, you know, it's pretty easy. And owners do love racing and winning at Keeneland. So
Yeah, I'd say we're half a step ahead of some others, maybe, just because of the history and prestige race meets at Keeneland.
Yeah, I would
People
say.
People love racing at Keeneland, so that definitely helps.
I would say, no doubt, you're winning in front of the home team, so to speak, and that always helps. How about Sunday? You got the Spinster, the Bourbon. You've got the new win in your in-race, the Indian Summer Stakes for the Juvenile Turf Sprint. Talk to me about Sunday's program.
Yeah, the starting with the Judmont Spinster, I mean, I don't know that we're going to have a large field, but Blue Prize, Dunbar Road, Elate, She's a Julie, that's four grade winners right there.
Mm.
So sometimes, you know, gosh, why is it only a five- or six-horse field? Well, not everybody wants to get up and face four grade one winners, but we're still making phone calls, and we're still trying to get some more runners. And anyway, that's going to be an outstanding race with really good quality mares in there. The Dixieana Bourbon, that's shaping up to where I think it's going to overfill. It has been the last several years. We got a horse coming from Europe, Cadet Conley. Got a couple horses coming from Europe. Mark Cassie's running a bunch, or a couple rather. Mike Maker. Let's see. These two-year-old, Patrick Biancone's bringing a nice two-year-old for this race. And the two-year-olds, for me, it's hard to handicap. These are young horses, inexperienced, and the Bourbon's turned out to be a good race every year. And the horses, man, they come out of this race, and they go on and do great things at the Breeders' Cup. So, but it is hard for me to judge with all the, you know, just only a handful of starts, and they're coming from New York, Kentucky, California, Europe. So that's the hardest race for me to judge just with the inexperience. And then the Indian Summer, we don't have a good line on the Indian Summer yet. One, two, three, four, about seven or eight that we know for sure right now. But I'm sure it's going to fill up, and that was a brand new race last year we created. It was very exciting, so we're looking forward to that to be just as strong.
Yeah, opening weekend at Keeneland, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Do not miss it. It has been just laid out. The stars are coming out. Make sure you do too. Ben, really appreciate the visit. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We'll get that to you, and I'll look forward to seeing you here in the Bluegrass in just a few days.
Okay, Mike, great show as usual, and thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Ben Huffman, racing secretary at both Churchill Downs and Keeneland. What a position to be in. And you heard him mention Allison DeLuca, who I had the privilege of working with when I worked in the racing office at Keeneland years ago, before I got started in the radio gig. Just top-notch. They do things the right way. And, yeah, when you have Keeneland to sell, it certainly helps, right? It's like working at the Lexus store of Lexington. You're selling a Lexus. Come on. How hard can that be? They sell themselves. The stakes races here, running at Keeneland, the prestige, it sells itself, and they do one heck of a job. Going to be a tremendous 3 days of racing Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and let's hope the weather continues to be as beautiful as it has been here in central Kentucky over the course of those 3 days. All right, coming up next, I'm going to visit with Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith. Yeah, you want to stay tuned for this one. He's going to look back 10 years after Zenyatta won the Breeders' Cup Classic. He'll look back on her. He'll look back on Game On Dude as we continue with Game On Dude Week, wrapping it up today on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And he'll look at McKinsey and his win in the Whitney as he gets set to be aboard McKinsey later today as well. That interview coming up. And then Mike Willman, Director of Publicity at Santa Anita, 940 Eastern Time. Don't forget that you can have the latest racing, breeding, sales, and industry news, plus analysis, entries, results, race replay videos, and more, all at your fingertips with the Blood Horse Daily app for your phone, updated throughout the day or delivered daily in an email. You can also listen to all of the news on your Alexa device. All of those are free. Simply go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download the app or sign up for the daily email. I'm back to visit with Mike Smith next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
This is Game On Dude Week on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a B-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake B-mesh horse fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Kentucky Derby winner Orb. On the track, his runners have scored on both dirt and turf, including multiple stakes winner Autumn Warrior and Sipican Harbor winner of the Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes at Saratoga. On the track, Orb continues to add winners. And in the sales ring, his two-year-olds have sold up to $250,000 in 2019. Classic winner, classic pedigree, Orb, standing at Claiborne Farm.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence.
They're into the stretch in the Whitney. McKenzie Preservationist, Vito Rosso, and Yoshida. And they're across the track, coming to the final furlong. McKenzie's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKenzie comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKenzie has won the Whitney.
Game On Dude, the leader, will take charge chasing. Game On Dude leads them. Game On Dude going to write his way into the history books. Game On Dude and Mike Smith have won the Santa Anita Handicap. Zenyatta coming flying on the grandstand side. Gio Ponti on the inside. Summerbird is right there. This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One we'll never forget. Looked impossible, but it is Zenyatta, still unbeaten under Mike Smith.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios here in Lexington, Kentucky. You know, when you start flipping through trying to find highlights from Hall of Famer Mike Smith's career, you could spend literally weeks going through and watching videos of some of the top performances and the top horses he's been blessed to be aboard. And those, just a few. McKenzie winning the Whitney. He'll be aboard McKenzie later today. Game On Dude winning the 2014 Santa Anita Handicap, his third victory in the big cap. And Zenyatta, one we'll never forget, in the Breeders' Cup Classic 10 years ago, 2009, the 10-year anniversary of Zenyatta's unbelievable performance that day. And to look back on that day and so many others is Hall of Famer Mike Smith now on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, thanks for getting up early this morning. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you. Nice way to wake up.
Yeah, I bet it is to listen to some of those calls. You know, boy, Zenyatta, can you believe it's been 10 years already?
No, it doesn't seem like it. You know, I mean, she was so special. It just seems like it was yesterday every time you think about her, to be honest with you.
I know you're going to spend a lot of time talking about Zenyatta over the next several weeks, if you haven't done so already. But when you think back on that performance in the Breeders' Cup Classic that day at Santa Anita, what are some of the first things that come to mind for you?
You know, I've been involved in a lot of incredible races, but man, that was one that was just different. It's hard to describe. It was something you had to witness, you know. You had to have been there to understand how special it was that day, and you know, just the way the crowd reacted, and you know, she went on for like a 15 to 20 minute ovation. They just kept on cheering for her. You know, it was pretty incredible. I think it'll go down as even Breeders' Cup will say is one of the top five Breeders' Cups of all time.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Is she starting that run that day and beginning to lengthen her stride and gain ground? But what's that feeling like for you as a guy who's been aboard so many top horses?
You know, I literally turned into a fan about the eighth pole when I knew that once she got out and she got you know, moving forward and running, I pretty much knew she was going to get there. At least she'd had every time. She never had let us down. So I became a fan about the eighth pole and just in awe of her and just cheering for her myself, to be honest with you, I was riding her.
Is that your top Zenyatta moment, or were there others?
Oh, she had every moment with her was amazing. But yeah, you would have to say that was the one right there.
Yeah, I would think
that's
so.
She became something bigger than a fantastic racehorse. She became an icon.
Yeah, and a household name for sure. Just one of the greats of all time, and going on to be voted Horse of the Year. You know, another great that you had the chance to be aboard, and we've been celebrating him all week long here on HRN, is Game On Dude, a horse who won 16 of 34 starts, more than $6.4 million in purses. I say the name Game On Dude. What comes to mind?
You know, just honesty, man. He was just one of the most honest horses. Every time he went out there, he laid it on the line, man. Win, lose, or draw. And that dude, he gave you his all. You know, it's just pretty incredible. I mean, his longevity to last as long as he did, and the way he ran, because he did all the dirty work, man, and had to continue to run on to win. I mean, he'd set the pace and have to, you know, contest with horses coming at him and finishing at him and hold them off. And so every time, you know, when you get a horse that has to do all the dirty work and still win and can do it at his age and for that long of time, that's just pretty incredible, man.
Yeah, it's pretty special, and I'm glad you brought up the fact that he did all the dirty work, because his style, completely opposite from Zenyatta, he would get into the hunt early and battle all the way.
Sure.
Completely different.
People knew, you know, I mean, that he was quick, so they would, you know, he never got away with nothing easy, man. He had he had to work, and they had horses that would go at him early and, you know, try him early to try to weaken him, you know, so he wouldn't have anything left to finish with. But every time, man, he would figure out a way to do it. He was incredible. Sometimes I wonder if he just went faster earlier, he just kept running fast. You know?
Yeah, he's now at Old Friends here in Kentucky.
Yeah,
do you ever get the chance to see him?
What he lacked in size, you know, he wasn't a very big horse, but what he lacked in size, man, he gained in his heart, man. He had a heart bigger than he was.
Do you ever get the chance to go out to Old Friends and see him when you make it to Kentucky?
Yes, I did. I got to see him, I guess it was a year before last I got to see him. Hopefully I'll get out there where I can spend more than just a few hours on the ground and be able to get out there and see him and Zenyatta and a few others as well. You know, Justify's out there, and there's quite a few of them out there that I'd like to stop by and see.
You know, I asked Bob Baffert about Game On Dude when he joined me earlier this week, and I asked him if Game On Dude still remembers him when he goes out to see him, and he said, I don't know. I think he remembers Jill more than he remembers me. So how about for you? Do you think the Game On Dude and Zenyatta, do they remember Mike Smith?
I think she used to. You know, it's been a bit since I've been out there, and as time goes on, you know, they get so many people that come out to see them both that you know, I think they remember that last person that gave him a peppermint, you know, or some sort of treat, you know. But yeah, there was a time that I think they did. But again, you know, it's been a while, so it'd be hard to say. But sometimes I'll get up next to Zenyatta and just sit up there, and she'll come over. And when I would go over to see her, and I don't know, I swear that she remembered me.
Yeah, so cool, so cool. Well, one horse that definitely remembers you is McKenzie, who you're going to be aboard later today in the Grade 1 Awesome Again Stakes. McKenzie, so impressive last time out in the Whitney, and I know that you were pretty pumped up after the race to finally get him that elusive Grade 1 victory against the older horse. I know he won the Pennsylvania Derby, but to do it against the older horses like that, that was special.
Yeah, it really was, especially in a race like the Whitney. You know, and then there's always been that little bit of a question, you know, when he get that distance, and he did it and acted like he could have continued on and gave me more. So that was a big sign. You know, he'd come off of just getting beat in the Met Mile, which he had a bit of a rough trip and probably could have wound up the winner that day. And so for him to come back and redeem himself and get that opportunity to do so and me to put him in the right place and get the job done was pretty special, man. I mean, and you look back at the horses that ran in the race, they came back in the next one and they were right there, 1, 2, 3, you know, so it was a big race to come out of.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd be remiss, Mike. I mentioned the Pennsylvania Derby. He also won the Grade 1 Malibu as a 3-year-old, and then his first Grade 1.
Yeah, he won a few Grade 1s, but, yeah, against older horses like that and in the classic kind of race, that was what he needed.
You know, and there were a lot of people, when you listen to a lot of the people that make selections and handicap, they said, well, you know, McKenzie, mile and an eighth, maybe not his best distance, but he proved that was a good distance for him. What did you feel underneath you? He's got to go a mile and an eighth again today. No problem there?
No, it actually wasn't, Mike. I mean, he finished strong underneath the wire. Matter of fact, he finished, you know, kind of putting his ears up, letting me know that there was still a little, you know, there was gas left in the tank if I needed it, and so he showed me that day that he could certainly run on. He horse Yoroshin came to him and he put him back away. It wasn't like, you know, he just held on. He was actually drawing away at the end. So that was a good sign.
I like his versatility. He's a horse that, you know, you get him up into the race, he seems to run well, or in the Met Mile, he dropped back a little bit and made that late run. He seems to do it from any position.
Yeah, just depending on the pace. Of course, the Met Mile was a whole lot quicker, a whole lot faster. So it just naturally kind of put him, you know, people thought that he got away bad. He actually broke good in the Met Mile. They just went really fast. The 44 is a whole lot different than the 47. You know, it's a good 15 length difference. So, you know, when they go really quick like that, he sits off of it and comes with a big run. He doesn't mind it at all. And, you know, when you're going long, anywhere from, a mile of 16 to mile 8 to mile a quarter, where, you know, they certainly don't go that as quick early on. So he's able to, you know, to get out of the gate and put himself in a good spot, and that's usually forwardly placed. But again, he can sit off of it. He can be on the lead. He's done it all, really.
Yeah, he's done it all, and he's hoping to do it one more time today in the Awesome Again, and then move on to the Breeders' Cup Classic, visiting with his jockey Hall of Famer Mike Smith here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, before I let you go, I'll ask you about the brilliant filly you've been aboard this year in Midnight Bisou. She runs in the Beldame today at Belmont Park. Of course, you're going to stay at Santa Anita and ride McKenzie, so you won't be aboard her. But after she won that last race in the Personal Ensign at Saratoga, I think you were asked on the coverage later, the television coverage, about horses like Songbird and Zenyatta, and you said, she's close. She's getting there. She's close. And, of course, I'm paraphrasing, but she's pretty darn good too, isn't she?
Oh, she's incredible. And, yeah, I mean, she's just catching everybody with leaps and bounds. I mean, she's just done. I mean, she's 6 for 6 this year. She's done everything we've asked of her. And, again, here's another versatile horse. I mean, she can be in front, inside, outside, in behind. I mean, it doesn't matter. She just gives you that run every time. And she's just a special, special filly. And it's, you know, too bad that both races came up on the same day. So not able to ride her this time, but the Lord's willing, we'll reunite in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, you know. So excited about her running today. Talked to Johnny about her yesterday, and she, not to mention, she loves Belmont too. It's a little bit of an icing on it, but it's a plus for her to be there as well, because she gets over that surface. That's probably one of her favorite surfaces. So if she'll continue to run like she's been running, she'll be hard to reckon with. They both will today. I mean, McKenzie, if he runs his race, he'll be tough, you know. And you just hope you can you're able to pull them both off without having to squeeze the lemon too much, you know.
What'd you tell Johnny when you talked to him?
Just everything about her. She'll pretty much tell you how she wants to be ridden, leaving the gate. You know, sometimes she'll leave there running, and don't be shocked if she's up there close. Or like I've even been on the lead with her. I said, and she runs just as well either way. She'll be covered up. She don't mind getting covered up right into the pocket. She'll do that. And she's so explosive. I said she'll as long as they give her a seam, you don't need a whole lot of room. She'll get through there. She's that explosive when she makes her move. It's just about getting her happy into that comfortable rhythm, wherever that's at. She's going to run big.
Well, we'll see if she can run big one more time today. And then, as you said, hopefully you and Midnight Bisou reunited for the Breeders' Cup distaff. But today she's in the very capable hands of fellow Hall of Famer John Velasquez. Mike, as always, can't thank you enough for taking the time and getting up early with me this morning. Really appreciate it. And I'll look forward to catching up with you as we make our way down that road to the Breeders' Cup here about a month away.
Man, can't wait. It's going to be a great Breeders' Cup this year.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Safe trip aboard McKenzie and everybody else today.
Yes, sir. Thank you, thank you.
All right, this Hall of Fame jockey, Mike Smith, like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send him a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. You can embrace your passion and wear what you love by visiting EmbraceTheRace.com. Man, this has been, you know, this show has been so much fun to hear from guys like Shug McGahee and talk with Junior Alvarado and Sophie Doyle and Ben Huffman. Mike Smith, I mean, you're talking about people who continue to do things the right way in this sport, represent the sport the way it's supposed to be represented. Going to do that next, too, with Mike Willman from Santa Anita. He's the director of publicity. He's going to join me in our next segment to help wrap up the program. Want to remind you, though, that your Kentucky Bred Spotlight for the month of September is, well, it goes like this, with so many Kentucky Bred yearlings who, look, undoubtedly the most coveted horses in the world. Coming off a historic Keeneland September sale, Kentucky Breds once again proved why they are the most coveted horses in all of the world. Kentucky Bred yearlings topped every session of the sale, and all of the 20 yearlings that sold for $1 million or more in book one, how about this? They were all bred in Kentucky, including the $8.2 million sales topper. Yeah, all bred right here in the state of Kentucky. Get your Kentucky Bred yearling at Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic, Fasig Tipton, Kentucky, and OBS October. You can do that, and you can see why they are the most coveted horses in the world. Visit KentuckyBred.org to learn more. I'm back to visit with Mike Willman. Look ahead to Santa Anita, and look back on what happened yesterday as well. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins the Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Bloods sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
World-class racing is back at Santa Anita, and you want to be sure to join us for all the fun and excitement this weekend. With the Breeders' Cup World Championships coming to Santa Anita for a record 10th time on November 1st and 2nd, top horses will prep here on Saturday for the $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic and the Grade 1 Awesome Again Stakes, and fillies and mares will compete in the Grade 1 Rodeo Drive at a mile and one quarter on turf. First post time on Saturday and Sunday is at 12:30. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world class setting.
In the recent Blood Horse Market Watch study of leading consigners with more than 100 yearlings offered from 2014 to 2016, Millridge Sales ranked highest among percentage of stakes horses and winners of $100,000 or more. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 34 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners. Their consignment at this year's Keeneland September sale includes yearlings from deep families by leading stallions such as Candy Ride, Curlin, Empire Maker, Ghost Sapper, More Than Ready, Quality Road, and Uncle Mo. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses. Adena Springs is home to two of the most exciting young stallions in Kentucky, Point of Entry and Mucho Macho Man. A 5-time Grade 1 winner, Point of Entry is the number one third crop sire by A Runner Index. In 2019 alone, the heir to Dynaformer's legacy is the sire of UAE Derby winner Puska Parfait, Breeders' Cup Mile contender Admission Office, and Graded Place 2-year-old Tuggle. Breeders' Cup Classic champion Mucho Macho Man is the leading second crop sire by Black Type Wins, led by Del Mar Grade 2 winner Mucho Unusual, and the incredibly tough and consistent Mucho Gusto, who has more lifetime graded wins or placings than any 3-year-old in his crop. Point of Entry and Mucho Macho Man are the latest stallions to carry on the classic bloodlines and classic performance tradition at Adena Springs. Call Ken Wilkins or Donald Wells today about 2020 seasons and visit adenastallions.com.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence.
A quarter of a mile to go, 8 rings, American Theorem, 2 behind second, Express Train flattened out a bit, Shoplifted on the far outside, but it's 8 rings who has his mind on business, and he is in complete command inside the final furlong. American Theorem, Valiant, but just chasing the very talented 8 rings, who's back on top with a dominant score in the American Pharoah Stakes. He wins by 4.5. American Theorem second. Then it was Storm the Court and Express Train.
Frank Miramati with the call. Yeah, 8 rings. That was yesterday at Santa Anita. Did he ever have his mind on business? An impressive performance. And on his way to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, virtue of that win on opening day of the Santa Anita Fall Meet, which, of course, will host the Breeders' Cup World Championships November 1st and 2nd. We will be there on the Horse Racing Radio Network, live on site all week long. More than 15 hours of Breeders' Cup coverage, including exclusive radio coverage of every Breeders' Cup race. Make sure you join us and visit horseracingradio.net for a complete Breeders' Cup schedule. 34 days, 3 hours, 55 minutes away, and nobody knows that better than Santa Anita Director of Publicity Mike Willman, who joins me now here on the Equine Forum. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on, Mike.
Yeah, no problem. Always great to catch up with you and talk about this opening weekend, because it's always star-studded and the stakes races are incredible. A little bit of a different format this year, though, spreading things out over the course of 3 days.
Yeah, we decided to go ahead and go with two of the Breeders' Cup winning year in races yesterday for the juveniles. We had the Chandelier for the fillies and the American Theorem, we just heard, for the colts. And, 8 rings was very impressive. Still a little bit green, quite a bit green, if you saw the post-race quotes. So even though he won off pretty easy, they had put blinkers on him. You know, he's still really not totally focused by any means. So I think it was pretty impressive. And, the final time, it looked like the racetrack slowed down a little bit through the afternoon, and I wouldn't pay much attention to that. He's obviously a very, very good horse. And, you know, they were happy to get him back on the beam after that mishap leaving the gate in the Del Mar Futurity. So it's all systems go, and big day for Johnny V yesterday. He broke the tie with Jerry Bailey earlier in the day for all-time graded stakes wins. So he's got 662 now, and who knows when he's ever going to slow down. But a big day with Baffert bringing him in and putting him on a couple of winners.
Yeah, 8 rings, and then Bast taking the Chandelier for the 2-year-old fillies and punching her ticket to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile fillies. And, you know, she, hey, look, she looks the part too.
Oh, she is really something special. Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. You know, it's just, Baffert just seems to come up with these monsters year after year after year, and she is definitely the real deal, no doubt about it. That was a dominant-type performance.
Mike, how big of an advantage is it with the Breeders' Cup? You know, it's going to be a record 10 times now that the Breeders' Cup has been held at the Great Race Place. How big of an advantage is it to have a big win like this over that track, or even a couple of them, where you know that your horse can definitely handle it?
Well, Baffert has, over the years, has kind of downplayed the importance of being able to stay home. But I think anybody that trains horses, if they had their druthers, they would much rather just be able to run out of their own stall to prep where they're going to be running. I think it's a plus. That said, you know, every year we're here, we do see horses coming from all over the place and winning. But I think it's huge. I also need to note, you know, in that Chandelier, we saw a jock that has come down from Northern California, and I believe, maybe not this meet, maybe it's too soon, but come the winter spring meet, a kid named Abel Cedillo, who's really no longer a kid, he's 30, is going to be contending with Pratt, with Van Dyke, with everybody else for leading rider. He rode Comical, who had been pretty well beaten by Bast at Del Mar, and they went head-and-head. They hooked up, you know, really head-and-head from the quarter pole home, but they were running together from the half home, and Comical ran a much, much improved race, filly by In the Mischief, trained by O'Neill, owned by a pretty big partnership. But I think it underscored just what this kid Cedillo brings to the game. He's just a dynamic talent.
Yeah, it's always great when you see these riders, as you said, not necessarily a young kid, but an up-and-comer who starts to kind of thrust himself into that upper echelon, and it sounds like he's doing that now. You've got another rock-solid program later today, 4 stakes races, 3 of those are graded. You have the 2 win-in-your-in races, the Rodeo Drive and the Awesome Again. Tell me a little bit about what folks can expect at Santa Anita later today.
Well, a huge day. We got a $500,000 guaranteed late pick 4, and you know, no doubt McKenzie's going to be the favorite. He's the early favorite for the Breeders' Cup Classic now, and he's in. You know, he won the Whitney. He's got a feast paid berth into the Classic. Smith and Baffert there, but I tell you, John Sadler, he's got higher power, and he ran off the television monitor in winning the Pacific Classic at about 9.5 to 1. And that was no fluke. This is a horse who had been based in the Midwest and was sold privately. And this will be his 4th start for Sadler. He's got the potential to upset. Flavion Pratt's going to ride him back, and he's a very serious horse. I'm really interested to see how higher power is going to run today here in the Awesome Again, which will go as the 10th on our 11-race card.
You know, Mike, I threw out a poll question this morning asking – listeners to weigh in on Midnight Bisou, who we'll see at Belmont later today. There's been a lot of chatter that maybe she is a legitimate, and I think she probably is, Horse of the Year contender at this point. And my question was, does she need to beat the boys in order to be Horse of the Year? And 54% of the voters are currently saying, no, she does not. She can go on and stick with the females and still be Horse of the Year. I maintain that McKenzie, even though he only has 1 grade 1 win this year, still has the inside track, because if he can win the Awesome Again today and find a way to win the Breeders' Cup Classic, I think it makes him Horse of the Year. Do you agree?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. And especially, I mean, you look at the 3-year-old crop this year, it kind of redefines muddled. So, yeah, I mean, if McKenzie were to win out here, to me, he's Horse of the Year, and then there's no way Midnight Bisou is going to be taking on the boys.
Right.
She's had an incredible, incredible year. You know, she's really flourished back there with Asmussen. So, yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, if McKenzie were to stub his toe, you never know. She may not have to go outside the, you know, running with her own kind. I always think back to Lady Secret, and she had that great year in, it was 86. But, she did not run in the Classic that year. That was the year Skywalker won it. Lafitte, Mike Whittingham. She ran in the Distaff instead of facing the boys and was able to win Horse of the Year. So who knows if something kind of offbeat were to happen in the classic where a long shot were to win, and we saw Midnight Bisou win today and then win the disc off, she'd have a shot at it.
Yeah, yeah, I said the same thing. I mean, you look back to Azari in 2002, it was the same situation where she never beat the boys, never faced the boys that year, but it was a year where you had Volpone pull off a huge upset in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and it was a wide-open, you know, older horse division that year, just like it is this year.
Yeah, and in these kind of, you know, elections, it's what you've done the most recently that weighs heaviest. And
yeah.
How your case is made and the people involved and everything else. Shockingly, it does get political. You know, that's just the way it is.
Talking with Mike Willman, who is the director of publicity at Santa Anita here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, the Rodeo Drive today, also a win in your end. Tell me a little bit about that race.
Well, it's a mile and a quarter with a short hillside start. It's all the way up at the top of the hill, but we do start up on the hill with a brief run to the dirt crossing. It's a wide open race. The filly and mare division here is anything but settled. Good betting race. Beau Recall comes off a game nose win down at Del Mar. Paved, ran into Basilica. She was a big price, 20-1. I know Michael McCarthy feels she's got a look here at a mile and 1/8. As I say, it's really kind of a wide open affair. With no conviction whatsoever, I would go to Beau Recall.
Yeah, Mike Willman here on HRN. I had a chance to visit with Mike Smith, in the previous segment, and he looked back. 10 years, the 10-year anniversary of Zenyatta, and tomorrow you celebrate the Zenyatta Stakes named in her honor. Another win in your end on this 3-day opening weekend program. Tell me a little bit about who we can see in the Zenyatta.
You know, Mike, unfortunately, I don't have those entries in front of me, but it's interesting you mentioned Zenyatta. You know, David Flores rode her the first three times she ran. She won the Zenyatta, formerly known as the Lady Secret, record three times, all in consecutive years, 2008, 9, and 10. And, what an amazing horse. I actually did a press release on her a few days ago, kind of marking a 10-year anniversary. And these are the kind of things you do to try and draw additional attention to the race. But one of the most amazing things I found in going back to her PPs, she broke her maiden first time out at Hollywood Park. I think it was in November. And she won going 6.5, and she was, last early and then rallied to win and won going away. And you'd think, boy, the way she was winning later in her career, going longer distances, how on earth did they ever get her to win going a sprint distance? But good horses will do that, And obviously at that point she was trained to run that way. But just an amazing, amazing horse. And she's currently in full to Candy Ride. She's had a star-crossed career, to put it mildly, as a broodmare. So often these great mares, they just don't come close to replicating themselves in the breeding shed. But I know hope springs eternal for a guy like Jerry Moss, and they're hoping that one of these days they can get one of her babies to be a graded stakes winner. It's still fun to watch. She's had some disappointments and had some tragedy with her babies, but hoping that the Candy Ride and a couple of her other will finally get to the races here and do well. But good memories, great memories. Maybe the greatest moment in Breeders' Cup history when she beat the boys here in 2009 from last to first, and Trevor Denman called it, this is unbelievable. And, of course, Smith aboard, and then she got beat ahead by Blame in the final start of her career. And despite that, I think it was kind of a make good. She was voted horse of the year and was not the year she won the Classic. They didn't give it to her that year, but she got beat in the Classic in 2010 and was able to get that Eclipse trophy there at that time.
Yep. Yeah. Special mare and a special filly as well as Zenyatta. That grade two Zenyatta comes up tomorrow, 5:30 Eastern. It is race number 5 on the 8-race program. Mike, about a minute left or so, just under that, and I got to get to another break, but I always like to give you that parting shot, let people know what you want them to know about Santa Anita when they come out or they're watching the races.
Well, we're back. You know, hey, look, we had an absolutely disastrous year, but we had a good, safe day yesterday. You know, all these protocols that are in place, Mike, they're working. They really are. I mean, Del Mar had an incredibly safe meet. Zero fatalities in the afternoon. They had a couple of mishaps in the morning, but on balance, by any accounting, an incredibly safe summer down there. And we're looking for more of the same this fall. I'm very, very confident that we're going to go into the Breeders' Cup hitting on all cylinders. It was just great to get back in action, have a safe day yesterday. But, you know, we're trying to pivot. Let's change the narrative, and let's start talking about horse racing and this great game instead of all this ancillary business, which is just become debilitating, to be honest with you. So it was nice to get back on the beam with great racing.
Yep, couldn't agree more. I think that's the press release that needs to go out each and every day, and we need to shout that from the rooftops. Mike, well done. Well done by the team out there at Santa Anita. Keep moving in the right direction, and can't wait for the racing this weekend. Can't wait to get out there for Breeders' Cup again.
We'll see you in a few weeks, Mike. Thanks.
All right, thanks for getting up early. Mike Willman here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Director of Publicity at the Great Race Place. Going to get to one final break. I'll come back and wrap it up for you. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Bet any track from anywhere with Keeneland Select. Keeneland Select offers something no other wagering platform does, a way to give back to the sport you love through Keeneland's reinvestment in thoroughbred racing and fan development. Become eligible for a $100 sign-up bonus and earn $50 back on every $500 wagered on the Keeneland Spring Meet, up to $1,000 wagered with code HRRN at KeenelandSelect.com or download the app free on the App Store or Google Play.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Airdrie Studs' summer front is poised to skyrocket to national sire prominence with his first crop of two-year-olds in 2019. A multiple stakes winner at two, this talented son of Warfront went on to win her place in 12 graded stakes with lifetime earnings of more than $1 million. With an explosive turn of foot, summer front routinely recorded times of a mile and 33 in some of the best grade one mile races in the country and possesses everything it takes to be an important sire for years to come. Airdrie Studs' summer front. Think about it.
Attending this year's Kentucky Derby? Experience the true difference at the official Derby Hotel of HRRN. Say hello to a brand new hotel experience from Hilton. That's vibrant, affordable, and young at heart. It's energetic, yet relaxing and comfortable. It's completely unprecedented. It's completely true. Enjoy modern amenities and quality comfort with guest rooms featuring a 55-inch flat-screen TV and 150 channels of DirecTV, along with a free breakfast, a state-of-the-art fitness center, and more. Discover affordability without compromise at Louisville's True by Hilton.
Power. Anchor Down has built a 5-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainesway Stallion, Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler, who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu, Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire, and buyers agree, with First Crop Yearling selling for up to $250,000 at Keeneland this November. Look for 9 yearlings by Anchor Down selling at Fasig Tipton October. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power. Passion, performance, you know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Keeneland and Red Brand Fence.
My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible this morning. You heard from Hall of Famer Shug McGahee talking with Anthony Stabile. Jockey Junior Alvarado was with me in the first half of the show. Sophie Doyle, our industry star of the week. Ben Huffman, looking ahead to Keeneland's Fall Stars weekend. Hall of Famer Mike Smith and Mike Willman, director of publicity at Santa Anita, all making for a very busy program. The poll question today, does Midnight Bisou need to beat the boys in order to be Horse of the Year? HRN Nation saying nope. 54% saying no, she does not. We're back this afternoon, live from Belmont Park, 4:30 Eastern, SiriusXM 156, and horseracingradio.net. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey on social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you this afternoon, and please, go Steelers.